A warm and friendly hello. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas. Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hughes, and now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. And got a great podcast for you. He's in the second segment. Brian Rolfe, he does a great job over there at HXCBB, does a podcast of his own, the Hope and Rolfe Podcast. He is going to be joining me in the second segment. We're going to be taking a look at all the games that we're going to be having for Tuesday. Going to be taking a look at the outlook of some of these teams out there in the Big 12 and the SEC, as well as they're going to be on center stage on Tuesday. And then in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. First things first, always do love to be able to answer your Twitter questions on this podcast. And you've got one or two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at JaredScorty1. Keep in mind, letter CM, name does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not wind up getting in any questions today, but we had a good day of basketball on Monday. So let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy recap.
How about if we start out there in the Mountain West? The DK Nation pick, ever since we went to DraftKings with regards to these, they're now 6-1 as Wyoming gets the job done by a count of 84-78. This one wound up going to overtime. Very much a nip and tuck back and forth game all throughout. You wound up seeing some interesting foul slash charge calls at the end of the game. David Roddy was a part of a lot of those. He was terrific for Colorado State with 23 points, but also did have 4 turnovers. And for Wyoming, they were able to get the job done at the free throw line at home, going 9 of 24 at the charity stripe. And it was Drake Jeffries with some big shots late, a guy that's averaging 11 points per game. He had 16 big ones in this game, going 5 of 9 from 3-point range. And then Hunter Maldonado put his name on the board as one of the top point guards in all of college basketball. Did have 8 turnovers, but 35 points, 7 assists, 3 boards. He really helped his team out to victory in a game that I feel like featured 2 teams that are going to be going to the NCAA tournament. Doing this before it wound up going final, but San Diego State, they really took it to New Mexico. A New Mexico team that going into this game, 13-5-2 against the spread, so one of your better cover teams there. And San Diego State wound up just taking it to them, so give them a lot of credit for that win. This was a tough loss. A few, much like me, wound up having it. Norfolk State, a 3-point favorite. They literally did not wind up trailing in this game until a 137 left in the contest. They wind up losing to NC Central in a battle of 2 relatively solid MEAC teams, as you had Norfolk State go 7-23 from 3-point range and 12 of 23 at the free throw line. They were able to force NC Central into 15 turnovers, but they themselves had 19 of them, so that was a little bit of a brutal one. This was not brutal if you wind up taking the ranked team, though. How about Duke? They go on the road, and they take down Notre Dame by a count of 57-43. I thought that there was going to be some regression with regards to this Notre Dame offense. Didn't think it would be to the tune of 3 of 18 from 3-point range. They just couldn't get anything going in this game. And for Duke, Paul Bancaro was like the only good offensive player in this game. 21 points, 9 boards. Now, A.J. Griffin, he himself wound up going 6 of 11 from the floor, 13 points, 9 boards, even with Trevor Keels coming in off the bench and really not doing a lot. He had 3 points, did wind up doling out 4 assists, but just 1 of 8 from the floor. Duke able to get a relatively comfortable win there. You wound up having a big loss for a team that I was high on, Western Illinois. They just got bludgeoned by UMKC, 83-75, a UMKC team that, since their COVID pause, had not been themselves. They wound up coming out and shooting 55% from 3, 56% from the floor, so give them credit for being able to get the W, force Western Illinois into 15 turnovers, best we've seen from them in quite a while. Pair of mid-majors that don't play fast, but play efficiently. Played a pair of unders, but both were able to get the job done straight up. For Vermont, they weren't able to cover against Albany, but just because this was a big line of 16, 73-61. They were able to get the W. Vermont, a top 50 team with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis. Liberty is as well. They take it to Kennesaw State, and they get a cover, 65-50. And Darius McGee, he continues to be a walking bucket. 16 points in this one. That's actually off of his season average of 23, and they forced Kennesaw State, Liberty did, into 4 of 23 three-point shooting, so very good displays from a pair of conference leaders. If you're looking for a big upset, Holy Cross, who wound up being a 15.5-point underdog, they went outright against a Boston U team that there were high expectations for this team going into the year, and they very nearly knocked off Florida State on the road, but they just look rudderless right now. 75-70, the Crusaders get the job done as, you know, Kyrell Luch be able to give the team 24 points, and for Boston U, they lose this game despite going 12 of 29 from 3-point range because they played even up on the glass, and they weren't really able to force Holy Cross into a lot of rebounds. And for Holy Cross, they shot 59% from the floor in this one. So that was a relatively sizable upset. If you, like me, wound up having Mercer on the money line, this was a nice hit. They win by a count of 67-62. Wofford in this game, 9-25 from three-point range. Mercer, they go 8 of 18 as they have been dealing with an injury to Naftali Alvarez. But with that said, the guy that was able to step up for 21 points, Jalen Johnson, the former Wake Forest and Tennessee standout. And then you wound up having James Glisson, the third, chip in there, 16 points, 9 rebounds. So Mercer, a very good win in this one. You also wound up having a couple teams that are very good slash bad against the spread go up against one another. Morgan State, now the worst team with regards to cover rate in all of college basketball. I should say covers in general, because worst cover rate actually belongs to Pacific. But Morgan State tied for the fewest covers of any D1 college basketball team with just 3. They don't cover again against Maryland Eastern Shore, 79-72. The Shore gets the job done as 1.5-point favorites. And for Maryland Eastern Shore, they have faltered a little bit here in MEAC play, but overall, you take a look at them for the year, and they've been able to do a solid job for you. This winds up extending them to 9-4 against the spread. That is a top 15 cover rate in all of college basketball. And on this day, it was Donchevil Nugent, who was able to give you 23 points. That is an interesting name to say. And for Morgan State, they've been one of the bigger disappointments out there in all of college basketball. Southern has been one of your better teams in all of college basketball, being able to cover as well as 2.5-point favorites. They get it done against Jackson State, 75-64, as they went 9-13 from three-point range. Also went 12-22 at the free throw line for Jackson State. A little bit of a tough state of affairs for them, as JVS McInnes had 5 blocks, 8 rebounds, and 9 points. But team went 5-19 from 3, 15-25 at the free throw line. This is a bottom 50 team with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis. And they wound up committing 19 turnovers in this game. Southern, a team that is generating right around 11 steals per game, they have been tremendous. 14-5 against the spread for them. Alcorn State out there in the SWAC, they are now 15-5 against the spread after they wind up losing on their home floor to Grambling. Alcorn State was just the beneficiaries of being underdogs for so many games out of conference. I think that regression is starting to set in. They were 6-point favorites, and Grambling gets the job done, 80-73. Not really sure why this line moved so much in favor of Alcorn State, but they went 6-24 from three-point range, and they wound up playing pretty much even up on glass. And for Grambling, on the road, they went 29-36 at the free throw line, including a 10-10 performance from Michael Morton. You just don't find that very often, where you wind up seeing a team on the road go 29-36 at the free throw line, and the home team goes 21-30. So that was a big, giant calamity out there. Eastern Washington, actually a relatively solid cover team as well. They're now 13-6 against the spread. They don't win, but they cover against Weber State 90-84. These guys have been some pretty pesky teams out there in the Big 12. TCU, they're looking like a trustworthy team. They take down Oklahoma by a count of 72-63. Oklahoma is just a team that I've not been buying in on. 6-26 from three-point range. Only 6 turnovers. They've been committing right around 11.5 for the season. But if TCU could just get Damian Ball to play a little bit more like he did in this game, 20 points, but more importantly, just 2 turnovers, this is a TCU team that can not only make the NCAA tournament, but win a game or two if they do wind up making it. TCU just 5-17 from three-point range, but 13 offensive rebounds. They are a top-5 team in all of college basketball with regards to offensive rebound rate. Pacific, your worst cover rate team out there in college basketball. They are tied with Morgan State for fewest covers in all of college basketball. They slipped a 3-16 against the spread as Joseph Varenkic wound up having 20 points for Santa Clara in an 81-59 win. And Pacific led 34-29 at the half before getting outscored 52-25 in the second half. Boy, was that a big, giant calamity out there. And then for Baylor, they're able to get the job done against West Virginia, but it was a little bit of a hairy one. It wound up coming down to a little bit of late-game fouling. And for Baylor, they allowed West Virginia to be able to go 11 of 27 from three-point range. And Baylor, they shot barely above 50% at the free-throw line. James Akinjo did wind up coming up with 25 points, but also came up with 4 turnovers in this game as well. West Virginia, they themselves, 14-23 at the free-throw line, but Tash Sherman was able to give the team 29 points. So very much an intriguing game out there. And when it comes to what we're all seeing in college basketball in general, we have been noticing that home underdogs recently have been able to have a little bit of a nice run of things. They're now 70-57-2 against the spread over the last 7 days. That is a 55% hit rate. And if you're taking unders, you're doing a good job. 54.9% is what the under is hitting at over the last 7 days. 192 unders, 158 overs. If you look a little bit more broad the last 30 days, we have seen unders hitting at more like a 50.6% clip. I think that this rate of unders is going to be sustainable for the next week or so. And then home underdogs in this time span, hitting at about 51%. Road teams, they're hitting at 52.5% over the last 30 days. But if you take a look at the last seven, road teams, 176, 175, and five against the spread. So darn near 50-50. I think it's going to be intriguing to see how that winds up varying moving forward, because I do think that we might see a good run on home teams moving forward. And on this podcast, we always have a good run of guests. And today, it's going to be Brian Roth of HXCBB joining me. We're going to be taking a look at landscapes of the Big 12 and the SEC and looking at a lot of the marquee games that we're going to be getting for Tuesday. That's up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hughes-Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hughes-Peterson, and now part of the VSiN Family of Podcasts. And it is always a pleasure to get this guest on the podcast. Does terrific work over there at HeatCheckCBB, and he's got his own podcast, the Hope and Rolf Podcast. You're able to find that wherever you get your podcasts, and that last name is spelled R-A-U-F, as it is Brian Rolf, who is joining me on the podcast. Does absolutely amazing work covering the game of college basketball out there in the eastern part of the country, in the great state of North Carolina, to be exact. And to be able to follow Brian on Twitter, that is at BRAUF33, B-R-A-U-F, and then the numbers 3 and 3. And Brian, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you joining me. And I think that we're going to get some really good action on Tuesday. You've got number one who's going to be going down in Auburn, lots of SEC action in general. And when it comes to the SEC, before we wind up diving into the games that we get on Tuesday, I will say I was very impressed by how they looked in the SEC Big 12 Challenge over the weekend. I don't think that they're necessarily as deep as Big 12 because, well, all 10 teams out there in the Big 12, they're relatively solid. You don't necessarily have one slug out there, whereas you've got like Georgia, Missouri, what have you, out there in the SEC. Ask Alabama about that, though. But with that said, I like what I saw out of the top 10 teams of the SEC, and I think that all in all, as a conference, when you wind up going up against these top teams, it is just an absolute gauntlet.
It is. Some of the SEC's top team success does have to do a little bit with matchups. It'd be great if this challenge, because it's held at the end of January every year, was a flex schedule almost, and then you had the first place team in the Big 12 at the time play the first place team in the SEC, or do it via net rankings somehow and actually get like 1 versus 1, 2v2, 3v3, make it a real challenge. I think that would be a lot of fun and would make this great event even better. But Kentucky still went into Kansas and blew out the Jayhawks. Auburn, as you mentioned, handle their business. The top of the SEC is better than any conference out there. I don't think you can say that right now. But to your point, the Big 12, I thought it was important, the Big 12 teams that won in the challenge, right? The SEC won 6 of the 10 games, so they won the challenge. But like TCU knocked off LSU for the Big 12, and that strengthens what was a bubble resume for TCU. So right now, the Big 12 has 8 of its 9 eligible teams projected to be in the NCAA tournament field. That's huge, right? Like, that's a big deal and would be historic. Those kind of wins are the ones that show the depth of the Big 12, even if the SEC with Kentucky and Auburn might be better at the top.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It is a case in which with the Big 12, I think that just 1 through 10, it is the deepest team in all of college basketball. The top end talent, though, might be there a little bit more with the SEC. And when it comes to the SEC, you've got some teams that, even though they might not be the number 1/number 2 team, they've got a lot of potential. And I'm talking about Alabama, because I don't know about you, I've actually picked a lot of their games correctly this year. Don't ask me how, but these seem to be the big giant meta mystery. It just feels like whatever you think Alabama's going to do, bet the opposite, and you're probably going to wind up getting there. But They're fighting themselves on the road against Auburn, an Auburn team that they played very tough the first time around. First time these two teams played a few weeks ago, it was 81-77, and I think Auburn gets the job done here, but I could see something very similar to what we wound up seeing a few weeks ago, where this is like a 1-2 possession game with a few minutes to go, because it just feels like with this Alabama team, they can win slash lose to anyone in the country on any given night.
I'm looking at it as Auburn is a really good team, which means Alabama is going to play really well. They play to the level of their competition as much as anybody in the entire country. There's no way that you go out and lose to Georgia and then a couple days later handle Baylor the way that they did. They're the only team that has that level of variance. When it gets to March, you know, you're going to be taking a gamble, putting Alabama pretty far. But if they win their first round matchup, I think, you know, they could be a team that rolls and makes the Elite Eight, maybe even Final Four. But I think that first round matchup is going to be the toughest one for them to get past, because they're going to be playing a hungry mid-major or power conference team that maybe just snuck into the tournament and maybe is playing at a high level. Not to get down the road here, but Alabama is one of those teams that the first round game they play is going to be the toughest, because it's going to be the worst team they face. And for whatever reason, they don't get up for those games. But Auburn, Alabama, Iron Bowl, number one team in the country coming in, you don't need anything to make yourself get up for that game. Everything surrounding that game does it for you. So I fully expect Bama to be at their best this week when they play.
And if you can't get up for the number one team in the country, well, I'm sorry. I just can't help you there, especially in intrastate rivalry. We know how big it is out there on the gridiron. Mm-hmm. It's also very big out there on the hardwood, as we do have Brian Rolfe joining me on the podcast. And Brian, when it comes to other things that we're going to be seeing out there in the SEC, Texas A&M did not wind up partaking in the SEC versus Big 12 Challenge. And I'll call it what it is. They took a really bad loss to South Carolina to drop them to four straight losses. But with that said, among their other losses, losing in overtime on the road against Arkansas, losing a close game against LSU, and losing to Kentucky in what was a little bit of a nip and tuck game, I've actually liked what I've seen out of them. And then speaking of another team that I feel like they can play up or down to the competition, it's Tennessee. Tennessee got the job done about a week or so ago against Florida, but that was a very hairy game. That game against Texas, it looked like they were just going to get bludgeoned until the final 5 minutes. They were getting destroyed, and then all of a sudden they go on a big run. Texas is another team that I feel like is a little bit of a jury's out situation as well, but that's a conversation for another game. But when it comes to Tennessee, I feel like I can't necessarily figure them out. I think that they should be able to win this game against Texas A&M, but I wouldn't be surprised if Texas A&M winds up giving another spirited effort and they keep this within like 2-3 possessions going into the final minute or two.
Yeah, Tennessee is very much dependent on whether they bring their offense or not. And far too often this year against the better teams, they'll bring it for stretches. They're not a team that can play consistent half-court offense at a high level. They don't have the shooting. They don't have the quickness. And quite frankly, from what we've seen the last 2 years, they don't have the play calling and the sets that create really good shots. That was the issue against Texas. They, for 33 minutes, I think they had like 32 points. Like it was, they were really awful on the offensive end and then caught fire. Texas kind of took the foot off the gas, and Tennessee is a team that will keep fighting. They are a tough team that will fight to the bitter end, and we saw that, and they almost pulled off that comeback. A&M has the same kind of identity, and A&M is the more desperate team in this case. You mentioned that there was a big question mark about them in the non-conference because 2 weeks ago they were 15-2 and 4-0 in the SEC, but hadn't played anybody. The two better teams they played in non-conference were Wisconsin and TCU. They lost those games. They beat Arkansas conference play at a time when Arkansas was not playing that well. And so they got there at 15-2 with one real notable win. And even that at the time was iffy. So the fact that they played Kentucky as close as they did, played Arkansas again to overtime, and then played LSU as close as they did, was a good enough sign that they were a decent team, but they needed to start getting wins and handling business against the lesser part of the SEC. South Carolina is that, and a home loss to the Gamecocks by double digits is not a good loss, to your point. That's almost as bad of a loss as you can take in the SEC. I think it's probably the fourth worst loss you can take right now. Missouri and Georgia and Ole Miss, basically people that Bama have lost to, are on there. So they need this to erase that and get some positive momentum back going for them and get another legitimate victory against a top-tier team to prove that they do belong in the NCAA tournament conversation, because they're 15-6. They're a 500 team in the SEC. Like that, on the surface, should be an NCAA tournament team. And right now, they are very much on the outside of the bubble because they don't have those quality wins.
Yep, it's a case in which Texas A&M has a relatively solid record, but now that they've been stepping up in competition, because let's call it what it is, they didn't wind up playing necessarily the world's greatest teams out of conference. Now it's starting to catch up with them a little bit more. As we do, Brian Rolfe joining me on the podcast. Another game that I think is going to be really intriguing for this Tuesday. It was very good the first time we wound up getting it, and I think it's going to be good once again. Iowa State is going to be playing against Kansas. Iowa State was within a point of being able to force overtime at the Fog. Now Iowa State gets them at Hilton Magic, and I don't know if Iowa State is going to be able to pull it off outright, but I could see another very similar result to what we wound up seeing the first time around. This is an Iowa State team that has been awesome on defense. Offensively, they've been a little bit more suspect, but what I've really noticed out of Kansas is that in the month of January, this offense just completely fell off the table themselves. Their offensive efficiency, points scored on a per 100 possession basis, dropped by over 15 points in the month of January. And I take a look at this Kansas team, and I really don't feel great about them right now, especially with them not necessarily being able to get anything whatsoever out of David McCormick.
The last seven games that Kansas has played, to your point, starts with that loss to Texas Tech in Lubbock that was not really that close. Then they went on a five-game win streak, capped off with that double overtime win against Texas Tech. Four of those five games were decided by 3 points or less, and they were not against the top tier of the Big 12, right? Iowa State was one of them, NCAA tournament team for sure, top 25 fringe team, so that's still a good win. West Virginia, a bubble team. Oklahoma, bubble team. Kansas State, not a tournament team right now. And they were struggling with those guys. And you can say, oh, a Big 12 play. Everyone gives Kansas the best shot. And then for them to come out and lay an egg against Kentucky over the weekend is concerning. I think it's really, really concerning. They are at their best. To your point, when David McCormack gives them consistent production down low, their offense is better playing through him, or at least having him as an option that defenses have to respect. And Remy Martin doing the same thing. His playing time has been cut drastically, some due to injury, some due to Bill Self's preference, which I don't want to get into because I don't want Kansas fans yelling at me that I don't know more than Bill Self, which is true. I don't know more than Bill Self. He's a Hall of Fame coach for a reason. But they're at their best when those two guys are playing and playing well. I think you need to play them more to get that offense back in gear. Right now, Remy Martin is the only guy on the perimeter who can consistently create his own shot. Ochai Agbaji is a National Player of the Year candidate, first-team All-American, great scorer, but he is not somebody who you throw the ball to on the wing and just say, go get a bucket. Bill Self has drawn up some great plays to get him open and good looks, and he's converted, but he's not somebody who creates on the bounce or completely attracts a defense and is good at playmaking for others from there in a driving kick scenario. That guy for them is Remy Martin. That was why they brought him in when they were looking really good. You know, last month, he was the main reason why, particularly late in games that got a little close or a little bit iffy. They got to get back to playing them more. And I know there's some growing pains, and I know the Cormack in particular is not playing well and Self is not happy with either of them for whatever reason. But until those two get back on track, I think this might be who Kansas is.
Yep, and Kansas is going to be entering this game, the top team out there in the Big 12. But I mean, the Big 12 is so brutal. I like what I've seen out of Texas Tech. I think that there's a real chance that if there is a team outside of Kansas and Baylor wins the conference, it might be them. We just discussed the fact that Texas has just looked all sorts of strange this year. Ironically enough, we're doing this just before the Texas versus Texas Tech game is set to go down on Tuesday, which I think that that is going to be a massive one as well. That's going to be to determine who's really going to be playing third fiddle to Baylor and Kansas. Mm-hmm. But I just take a look at the Big 12 in general, and I do think that they're all relatively solid teams. And though Kansas currently leads the Big 12, I've got my question marks with them. Meanwhile, I'm liking what I'm seeing out of a lot of these other teams outside of Kansas and Baylor.
We talked about it at the top with TCU's win over LSU. Eight of the nine eligible teams, because Oklahoma State is not eligible, and that's a conversation for a different day that could take up an entire podcast. But, you know, 89% of your league right now is an NCAA tournament team. That's a gauntlet. And they're in that position because all of those teams have big wins, knocked each other off. There's been a little, to use John Rothstein's term, cannibalism within the Big 12. And that's almost by design, playing this true home and away round robin with everybody. They're one of the few conferences that still do that, or at least small enough to still do that. And I like that they do it. But the end result, when you have a bunch of good teams and good coaches, is this kind of cannibalism where you don't have a runaway favorite unless they're like Baylor last year. That was historically great. It makes the Big 12, I think, the most fun conference in the country to follow because it's a really intriguing race every single season from top to bottom. Every game is meaningful. So to me, that's what has made this year a lot of fun and special for the Big 12.
Yeah, it's been an absolutely amazing year for the Big 12 as we do have Brian Rolfe joining me on the podcast. And Brian, we've talked about some of the marquee games that we are going to be getting on Tuesday. Is there one or two others that really stand out to you? Because even though we don't necessarily have the world's biggest slate, it is a slate in which I think is going to be incredibly good because you've got a lot of ranked teams that are going to be in action. Feels like every single one of the games that we're getting, heck, even the Mountain West games, they all involve some sort of NCAA tournament ramifications. Any one or two that we have yet to talk about that is really standing out to you?
I'm biased because I will be at Colorado State, San Diego State on Friday. I'm very excited for that game. Colorado State, I think, is one of the best mid-majors in the country. And right, I think they're a top 20 caliber team, a Sweet 16 caliber team. San Diego State was the first team that beat them and is an elite defensive team and is playing to get another marquee victory for their NCAA tournament resume. They're on the bubble as well. Beating Colorado State, again, would certainly go a long way towards that. I'm just excited to get out there and see Colorado State. First off, David Roddy and Isaiah Stevens are, I think, one of the best duos in the country, mid-major or power conference. That's how good those two are. I'm excited to see that matchup, some of the underlying storylines there that it may not be the most publicized big game, but if you're looking for an off-the-radar game to watch on Friday night that has some major Mountain West and NCAA tournament implications, that's the one I'd look at.
I do think that we're going to get a lot of good games for Tuesday, and I think that moving forward, the next month or so of college basketball leading up to these conference tournaments is going to be absolutely superb, and I know that you and one of our other good friends of this podcast, Connor Hope, are going to be talking about that on your podcast. I know that you're going to be doing some great write-ups over there at HeatCheckCBB. I know you come out with great articles every single weekend. All you guys over there at HeatCheckCBB do an absolutely terrific job. So let the good people at home know what's next for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at braouf33. It's B-R-A-U-F-33. You'll find me tweeting about college basketball every night, all the big games, all the little games. You can follow me there. And then obviously everything you need to know as a college basketball fan, we think is up on HeatCheckCBB.com. We're all big college basketball fans. And one of the reasons that we love the site and writing for the site is that it's a place where we can put out what we would want to read as college basketball fans. So if you are a diehard college basketball fan, I think you'll be able to find anything you want on HeatCheckCBB.com.
And Brian does an absolutely terrific job over there. Brian always brings it whenever he is on this podcast. And all the gentlemen over there at HeatCheckCBB doing absolutely amazing work. Today was Brian that wound up joining me. So big thanks to Brian for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eupsiers, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always a pleasure to get Brian Rolfe on the podcast. He does a great job over there at HeatCheckCBB, and you're able to catch his podcast, the Hope and Rolfe Podcast, wherever you get this podcast. So big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at JarenScordy1. Going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order as per usual. This is where we go with the games with three digits on them at first. And then if we would have any extra games, they would have six digits. They'd be at the bottom. Those involve smaller conferences. We do not have any of those today, so it is all pretty much a time order. Sometimes it deviates a tad, but the reason why I wind up doing Las Vegas rotation order is because a lot of books wind up putting these games in this order, and when you wind up going to Las Vegas, instead of saying, oh, I would like to bet on the Kansas spread, you'd instead give the rotation number of 617. So that is why we do it this way, as we do begin with 601, 602 on the betting board. Boston College is going to be in the road to face off against Virginia. Virginia is an 8.5-point favorite with your total on this game, 119 to 119.5. I recognize that this is a Virginia team that their defensive efficiency is not what it once was. This team is outside the top 100 with that regard, but still a team that is dead last in the country when it comes to possessions per game, so they certainly are throttling things down. And then when you take a look at what you're able to get out of Boston College, it is a team that isn't terrible with regards to their offense, but they too are very slow. They rank in the bottom 30 with regards to possessions per game. You've got the Langfords in Demir and Makai Eshin Langford giving you a combined 23.5 points per game. Boston College overall 11.3 turnovers per game, so they take care of it, and Jaden Zachary has been able to shoot 47% from distance, 9 points per game. But when you take a look at this BC team as well, among their top 7 scorers, 6 of them shoot 73.5% or worse at the free throw line. You do have a guy in Quinton Post is able to give you 5.5 boards per game. And then you do take a look at TJ Bickerstaff with his 8 boards per game. That's relatively solid. But Jaden Gardner, I think, is going to be able to take him to task. He's been able to give Virginia a little bit over 14 points, 7 boards per game. Now, Virginia, their 3-point shooting is right around 32.5% as well. So that's a tad bit of an issue for the team. But they do get 5 blocks per game down low. You've got Caden Shadrick really doing a great job there. 6.5 points, 5 boards. He's been able to give the team at least 2 blocks in 4 of the last 5 games. Was a little bit limited in the team's most recent game against Notre Dame, so that's something you do want to keep note of. But K.A. Clark along with Reese Speakman are able to combine for 9 assists, so right around 3.3 turnovers per game. They're able to give you a combined 17.5 points per game. So I do think that Virginia going to be able to get the job done against the Boston College team. That you just take a look up and down the board for this team. They've got a bunch of transfers that wind up coming in from places like the Patriot League, and they're just not really an ACC style of roster that you'd like to see right now. So I do think that Virginia, with their talent, going to be able to win out in this spot. Maybe Virginia a 10-point favorite. When it comes to this total, got two teams in the bottom 40 with regards to college basketball in terms of possessions per game. I think it's going to be a slog. Set this total at 114, so diving under to go along with Virginia. 603, 604 on the betting board. Creighton is going to be in the road face-off against UConn. UConn is finding themselves as a 9.5-point favorite with your total on this game, 134.5. When it comes to UConn, they wind up setting them as a 10.5-point favorite. Creighton is a team that I'm starting to sour on a little bit just because the turnovers for this team have really manifested themselves. You do have a guy in Ryan Nemhard who does a good job of being able to give out 4.2 assists per game. He's been able to chip in there right around the 11.5 points per game, but shoots 30% from 3 with 3.3 turnovers per game. All in all, Creighton 14.8 turnovers per game. They do have a pair of guys that do a good job down low in Ryan Hawkins along with Ryan Kalkbrenner. They both give you between 12 and 12.6 points per game. They combine for 14.5 rebounds per game. And then when it comes to Alex O'Connell, he has become a good sharpshooter for this team, making 89% of his free throws, 38% of his threes with 13 points per game. But Arthur Kaluma turns the ball over a little bit too much as well. Then when it comes to UConn, they should be able to win the battle down low because you do have someone like Adama Sanogo who's able to give you 15.5 points, 8.5 boards per game. Tyrese Martin, 13.5 points, 6.5 boards, shooting 44% from three. Andre 3000 Jackson, 8 boards, 3 assists, shooting 48% from the outside. UConn is old. They turn the ball over 12.5 times per game, ranking the top 100 with regards to possessions per game. Shoot 74.5% at the free throw line, 35.5% from 3. Isaiah Whaley's able to give you 5 boards per game. You've got so many weapons out low for UConn, all coupled with RJ Cole, who at the point guard spot gives you 4.6 assists to fewer than 2 turnovers per game, shoots 90% at the free throw line. UConn is going to be highly efficient in this game, and I do think that Creighton is going to look to pump up their tempo a little bit more as well. This is a UConn team that ranks in the top 100 with regards to possessions per game, which typically you'd expect that to be Creighton, who's more like 200th. I do think that things wind up getting a little bit more up-tempo, so I'm going to be taking a look at this total over as I wind up setting it at a 136.5, and with UConn, one lay up to 10.5 with them, so laying anything up to 10 with UConn. 605, 606 on the betting board. Western Michigan is going to be playing us to Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois is finding themselves between a 2 and 2.5 point underdog with your total on this game, and we're between 135 and 136. I set this line at 2, so now that we're getting the hooks on the 2, I'm going to be starting to take a look at Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois is a team that they do rank in the bottom 25 with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis. That's mainly due to the turnovers. This is a team that they're turning the ball over 15 times per game, but you have noticed that a few guys like Caleb Thornton and Keyshawn Williams have been able to do a better job with their outside shooting. Thornton is able to give the team a little bit over 8 points, 4 assists. He's shooting 35.5% from 3. And then with Williams, 16 points, a little bit over a steal per game. From distance, he is shooting 39.5%. He has been able to give the team at least 16 points, and now 5 out of the last 6 games, Trenton Hankerson. He's done a nice job with 10.5 points, 3.5 boards. Now, with Northern Illinois, don't have a lot of rebounding. Anthony Crumple with his 5.3 boards per game leads away, and Marquise Hastings on the flip side for Western Michigan. He's been able to give this team in the neighborhood about 9 points, 8.5 rebounds per game. And then Lamar Norman Jr., going to be the best overall scorer in this game. He's chipped in there 19.5 points per game, shooting 37% from 3. But take a look at Western Michigan, though. You do have Titus Wright being able to give you 4.5 boards per game. He's not necessarily much of a scorer. B. Artis White is back in the fold. Last year, he was able to give Western Michigan 42% 3-point shooting with 14 points per game. But he just has been inconsistent this year. You take a look at the last 5 games. 3, 23, 7, 6, and 21 points. And he's also had a combined 12 turnovers in the last 4 games as well. This is a Western Michigan team that they themselves turn it over 15 times per game. So you got a pair of offenses that, well, let's call it what it is. They don't do a great job of being able to put the ball in the basket. But at the same time, you've got two teams that are in the bottom 100 with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis, with Western Michigan being the lesser of the two. Did wind up saying the sold at 136. You got a pair of mid-tempo teams that are likely going to be finding themselves in a game that is going to be involving late game fouling. So I'm willing to take a look at the 135 over. And when it comes to Northern Illinois, willing to take 2.5 or more with them as I set my line at 2. So taking the points along with you over 607, 608 on the betting board. Central Michigan is going to be playing us a Bowling Green. Bowling Green, a 7-point favorite with your total on this game, 158 to 158.5. When it comes to Central Michigan, wound up setting them as a 9.5-point underdog. With Bowling Green, I've been actually quite impressed by this team. Daquan Plowden, going to be the best player out there on the floor. A guy that's able to give this Bowling Green team 17 points, 7 boards, shooting 39% from 3-point range, 20-plus points in 3 of the last 4 games, and has been able to lessen the turnovers as well. 2 or fewer in 4 of the last 5 games for Central Michigan. Turnovers as a woe for this team. 14.3 per contest. You do have Ralph Bezenthe, who's been able to give you 10 points, 7 boards per game, actually shooting 36.5% per 3. And you take a look at the Central Michigan bunch, among their top 6 scores, 5 of them shoot at least 36.3% from 3. Overall, they shoot 36.5% from distance, but 66% at the free throw line. You don't get a lot of rebounding outside of Bezenthe. You've got one guy giving you more than 4.2 boards per game. I will say you've been able to get a little bit of facilitation out of Jermaine Jackson Jr., a guy that is missing once again for this team. 11.5 points, 2.7 assists per game. So that has led to someone like Kevin Miller having to step up from that aspect. He has been able to give out 3.5 assists per game in his absence, but at the same time, he is a guy that's giving you right around 2.5 turnovers per game as well. You've seen his 3-point shooting percentage dip a little bit, 3 rebounds or fewer in 4 of the last 5 games. So I do think that there are some big-time issues there. And then when it comes to Bowling Green, Myron Gordon has been able to do a good job of being able to give out right around 3 assists to less than a turnover per game, 10-plus points in each of the last 5 contests, all while turning the ball over just 6 times in that time span as well. And for Bowling Green, also have a guy in Joe Reese who's been able to give you 12 points per game. He is shooting 50% from 3, obviously. A little bit of a small sample size there, but he's been able to come through. He's been able to give this team some good production all season long with right around 5.5 boards per game as well. I think Bowling Green should be able to win from within. Bowling Green has been one of the more up-tempo teams in all of college basketball. Central Michigan, they've been trying to push tempo a little bit more. Problem is, they've just been held down 72 points or fewer in each of their last 5 games, and Bowling Green is a team that they're willing to give up the points, but at the same time, I just don't think that Central Michigan going to be able to do their part on this total. Looking at the under semi-total at 154.5, and when it comes to the spread, willing to lay up to 9.5 here with Bowling Green. So laying the points to take a look at the under, 609, 610 on the betting board. Ohio is going to be playing against Ball State. Ball State is a 12-12.5 point underdog with your total on this game, 145.5. And when it comes to Ball State, wound up saying them as an 11.5 point dog, so I'm going to be willing to take the points here. When it comes to Ball State, this is a team that has been rounding into form a little bit more. Peyton Sparks, I like what you're able to get out of him. He's been able to chip in there right around 7 rebounds per game. When you take a look at this Ohio team, gotta love what you've been able to get out of Mark Sears. Sears is filling in for Jason Preston and doesn't give out as many assists per game with right around 3.7, but has still been able to give this team 20 points, 5 rebounds. He's shooting over 41% from 3 at home. That goes up to 48.5% with 22 points per game. So he has been terrific, but the Northern Illinois transfer, Tyler Cochran, has been amazing for Ball State as well. 12.5 points, 6.5 boards. He's been able to chip in there 35.5% 3-point shooting, double figures in each of the last 5 games, and shoots over 41% from 3 with 12 points per game on the road. So he's actually been able to do his best work away from Muncie. You've been able to get Luke Bumbalo going. He's able to shoot 37% from three. Now with Ball State, they do shoot 68.5% at the free throw line, but they also shoot 36.5% from distance. This is a bunch that they don't force a lot of steals, so I do think that you're going to get some relatively clean possessions in this game. I myself wound up setting my total at a 145.5, and at 145.5, I'd rather have an over rather than an under, because I do think that there is a slight possibility that Ball State winds up keeping this in close, winds up coming down to late game falling. I will say for Ohio, they've been a relatively good defensive team. They have allowed 63 points or fewer in three out of their last four games, but Ball State, they've been pumping up the tempo at least 70 points in each of their last four games. They're a defense that they can get a little bit rudderless as well. You've got an Ohio team that should be able to win the battle down low. Jason Preston, Ben Vanderplas, these guys combined for 14 boards, right around 27 points per game. Vanderplas shoots 35% from three as a 6'8" combo player, but Ben Roderick currently dealing with a little bit of an ailment as well. That is going to take a little bit out of the sails of Ohio, so I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Ball State. Made them an 11.5 point dog. When it comes to total, right now it's landing on what I've got right now, 145.5, so I'm waiting on a line move with this one, but here at 145.5, would rather have an over than an under. 6'11", 6'12" on the betting board. You've got yourself Davidson hitting the road to face off against Saint Pod Adventure. The Bonnies are a 3-3.5 point favorite with your total on this game between 139.5 and 140. When it comes to the Bonnies, I did wind up setting them as a 1.5 point underdog. Saint Pod Adventure is a team that I'm just completely out on right now because they've got no depth whatsoever. This is a Bonnies bunch that they are getting literally 0 points per game off their bench recently. It's been absolutely insane to take a look at. Meanwhile, for Davidson, this is just a well-oiled machine. It's a team that from three-point range is shooting 40.8%. Now, you have seen a little bit of a slowdown from the team recently, but I mean, you still have each out of your top five scorers shooting at least 39.2% from three-point range. It's absolutely ridiculous. Foster Lawyer has been able to do an absolutely magnificent job for this team. He's been able to give out right around 3.5, 4-ish assists per game. He's shooting over 40% up from three with 16.5 to 17 points per game. Hunjun Lee is able to chip in there. Seven boards to go along with his nearly 45% three-point shooting. He's been able to give you right around 17 points per game as well. Luka Petrovic chips in there about seven boards per game for a Davidson team that, I'll say it, they're not necessarily the world's greatest on the glass. So having Oshunoshuni for St. Bonaventure giving you right around 10 points, seven boards and three blocks per game is going to be big. But with the Bonnies, they allow opponents to shoot 35% from three-point range. That is 262nd in the country. That is going to be a big giant woe against a Davidson team that they just live to shoot threes. They don't turn the ball over a heck of a lot. St. Bonaventure has been generating a few more steals this year than in the past, but certainly isn't necessarily too dialed in there with St. Bonaventure. You do have to like what you're able to get. Jerron Holmes, he's been a good versatile player for the team. 15.5 points, 5.5 boards, 4 assists, only shooting now 30% from 3-point range, and that's a big issue for the Bonnies. They have to have everyone just pretty much playing their role. They have to do it all. You've got Jalen Attaway, who's able to give you 15 points, 7 boards. He shoots 44% from three. All in all, the Bonnies shoot 77.5% at the free throw line, 32% from three. But these guys just get worn out at the end of games because they've got literally nobody coming in off the bench to give them anything whatsoever. It's a very, very bad look for St. Bonaventure, to say the least. And I think that Davidson, a team that does a good job of being able to be very controlled, being very deliberate with their offense, going to be able to get it done. I think that this is going to be a slow game. The Bonnies, they have to slow down their tempo with only playing five men at this point. So set this total 133.5. I'm diving under. With Davidson, made them a favorite, so going to be taking them on the money line as an underdog. 6-13, 6-14 on the betting board. Northwestern is going to be playing us a Rutgers. Rutgers is a 5-5.5 point underdog with your total on this game between 131 and 131.5. When it comes to Northwestern, I wound up setting them as a 6-point favorite. So I'm going to be willing to lay it here. Rutgers is always a little bit of a different team away from the Rackville. They're coming off a road win against Nebraska. Keyword is against Nebraska. Ryan Harper Jr. has been solid for the team. 16 points, 6 boards, and they got that win against Nebraska despite the fact that he wound up having single digits in that game. Geo Baker has been able to step up for the team. 4 boards, 12.5 points per game. He's been able to shoot from 3-point range, only about 33% from distance. He chips in there a little bit over 4 assists per game as well. Has been able to get the team 14-plus points in each of the last 3 games to his credit. You've been able to get a little bit more down low out of a guy like an Andre Hyatt, 5.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game. He is a good complement to Cliff Amarui, who's really the main low post player of this team. 8.5 rebounds per game for him. Now, when it comes to Rutgers, you do have among your top 4 scorers, 3 of them shooting at least 76% of the line, big because they shoot as a collective about 69% at the charity stripe. They do turn the ball over just 11.5 times per game, with Paul McKay being able to give you 5 assists per game, so give him some credit. But with Northwestern, this team is in the top 15 in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. and Pete Nance, one of the most underrated players in the country. 16 points, 7 boards, 3 assists. He's 6'10", buries about 44.5% of his threes, gives you a little bit over a block per game as well. Chase Odish, after he wound up missing the beginning part of the season, has been able to dial in a little bit more recently for the team, giving them 11 points per game. But you take a look at it, and he has been off his game recently, giving the team 7 points or fewer in each of the last three. So that is something that does give you a little bit of caution, but you still have other guys like Tyberry, who's able to give you 7.5 points per game, shooting 41% from three. Boo Booey, 5 assists and 2 turnovers per game, shooting 36% from the outside. I do think that Northwestern going to be able to do enough down low against Cliff Amarui with the way that Pete Nance is able to defend, and I think that guys like Ryan Greer going to be able to step up in this game. I am very much willing to lay the points here with Northwestern, and when it comes to the total, I do expect a little bit more of a control game, but Northwestern, they're very efficient on offense against a Rutgers team that's a little bit slower. I think he could wind up getting some late game fouling, so I set this total at 133 going over. I'm willing to lay it here with Northwestern, 615, 616 on the betting board. Michigan State is going to be in the road face-off against Maryland. Maryland is between a 3.5 and 4.5 point underdog, and your total on this game is 138.5. I said Michigan State as a 3-point favorite. So I'm going to be willing to take the points. When it comes to the coaching that you wind up getting out of Danny Manning, it's not necessarily too terrific, but at the same time, I do think that he's been able to find something in the backcourt of this team. Eric Ayala has been on another level for this team, a guy that began the year a little bit hot and cold, now has been able to get the team 16 points, 5 boards per game. You take a look at him, and he has been teeter-tottering a little bit more recently, 2 single-digit performances in the last 3, but really ever since Danny Manning wound up taking over as the coach of this team, he has had 16 plus points in something like 8 out of the last 12 games. So he has been able to do a nice job there. You've got Fats Russell, who's able to give out 4 assists, 13 points per game, 4 boards. He is not necessarily the world's greatest 3-point shooter, shooting right around 31% from distance. And at home, that's more like 26%. Got a Michigan State team on the flip side that they do shoot from 3-point range, about 39%, 74.9% free throw line, but turnovers are costly for this team. 14 turnovers per game. I do like what you're able to get out of Marcus Bingham Jr. 3 blocks, 9.5 points per game. Gabe Brown is able to step up in a big way for this team, 13 points per game. He shoots very well from 3-point range. Max Christie now shooting 36% overall from 3, but 44% on the road. I do think that that might dry up a little bit. I do think that Maryland is going to be able to find a little bit more down low when it comes to someone like a Julian Reese. Reese has been seeing more minutes with Kudus Wahab having his minutes slashed a little bit. I am not necessarily sure why, but you do take a look at him, and he has been able to get the C 5-plus rebounds in 4 of the last 5 games. A guy that really doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't give you a ton of stretchability, but has been able to do a nice job as a rim protector. I do think that Maryland has been able to hone in on a relatively solid style of playing not necessarily super fast, but not necessarily playing super slow either. I think that this does wind up coming down to late-game fouling, and Maryland, they've been solid at the free throw line. They shoot right around 75% at the charity stripe. They turn the ball over just 12 times per game, so did wind up setting the total at 139. I think that you'll get a pair of efficient offenses here looking at the over, and with Michigan State, was only willing to lay up to 3 with them, so I'm going to be taking the points here with the home underdog of Maryland. 6-17, 6-18 on the betting board. Iowa State is going to be playing us Kansas. Kansas is finding themselves a 3.5 to a 4.5 point favorite, and your total on this game is anywhere between 138 and 138.5. With Iowa State, set them as a 2-point underdog. Never underestimate Hilton Magic when it comes to this team, and I feel like Iowa State has just been underrated all season long. Now, Kansas, even though they won the first matchup, they only won that matchup by 1 point in a game that, I'll say it, Iowa State wound up getting their tempo in, so you know that they're going to want to come out with a little bit of a better effort in this game. I just don't know if they're going to be able to. Ever since the beginning of January, Kansas has went from one of the most efficient offenses in the country, and in the month of January, compared to what you wound up seeing in November and December, their points per 100 possession basis wound up going down by 15 plus points. Remy Martin, it's just not necessarily been that great for this team. You got Oshai Ogbaji, who's been absolutely terrific. He's been able to give the team 21 points, 4.5 rebounds per game, shooting 46.5% from 3. He certainly has done his part for the team, but David McCormick has become a little bit of a liability. In the last game, he wound up playing just 10 minutes against Iowa State. He had a grand total of 1 rebound in the game against Kentucky as well. Now, Jalen Wilson has been able to do some nice things down low. He's given the team 9.7 boards. He's been able to give the team 8-plus boards in each of the last 5 games, so give him a little bit of credit there, but KJ Adams doesn't necessarily excite me either. And then when it comes to Iowa State, this team is able to generate right around 9 steals per game. That's one of the best marks in all of college basketball as a collective. They shoot about 33% from 3, but Anich Kunich along with Caleb Grill, these two guys combined to be able to give you 13.5 points per game. They combined to be able to shoot well over 40% from 3. Tyrese Hunter, Gabe Kelscher, they combined to be able to give you 3.6 steals and 20.5 points per game. And then Isaiah Brockington, 17 points, 8 boards. He shoots 41% from 3. I don't know if Iowa State is able to pull off the game outright, but I'm now seeing at DraftKings this game go to 5. I am very willing to take the points. Set my line at 2. I think that Iowa State going to be able to control the tempo once again in this game, with Kansas becoming less and less efficient with regards to their offense. So I'm going to be taking a look at the under in the spots at my total 135, and I like the points here with Iowa State, 619, 620 on the betting board. Miami of Ohio is going to be playing against Kent State. Kent State is finding themselves a 2-point underdog with your total on this game between 137.5 and 138. When it comes to Kent State, I wound up setting them as a 2.5-point underdog, so I'm willing to lay the deuce here when it comes to Miami of Ohio. Miami of Ohio has been a relatively efficient team, not a team that's necessarily going to blow the top off of you, but I do like what you're able to get out of Day-Day Grant, a guy that has been able to give you just under 17.5 points per game, a guy that from 3-point range has been able to shoot in the neighborhood about 33% overall, but at home, that goes up to 39%. He does give out a little bit over 4 assists to 1.5 turnovers per game, so has been very good there. And for Miami of Ohio, this is a team that they do rank in the top 20 of the country when it comes to turnovers on a per-possession basis. Then on the flip side for Kent State, Sincere Carey has sincerely been terrific for this team. 18 points, 4.5 boards, 5 assists, steal and a half per game. Ian Malik Jacobs combined for 3 steals per game. Jacobs is able to give you 12 points per contest. Carey shoots about 33% from 3. Jacobs, 22%. That's been a woe for Kent State. They only as a collective shoot about 30% from 3-point range, but you've got one guy that is able to shoot about 40% in Andrew Garcia, who's coming. He's been able to give this team right around 7 points per contest. Someone that wound up playing at Georgia and Stony Brook in recent years. He expected a little bit more sizzle out of him, but certainly has been able to give this team a nice little bit of a spark ever since he wound up starting out the year injured. Has been able to give the team now combined 31 points in the last 2 games. And then also have Justice Hamilton down low. Justin Hamilton right around 6.5 rebounds per game. But for Miami of Ohio, I do think that Delonte Brown is going to be able to do a good job for this team. 12.5 points, 6.5 boards, shoots 39% from 3. Miami of Ohio, they shoot 78% the free throw line. And Kent State, one of the better free throw shooting teams in all of college basketball as well. They bury about 77% of their free throws. So I do think that you're going to see two relatively efficient offenses. Kent State has been cranking up their tempo a little bit more, but still in the bottom 100 with that regard. Miami of Ohio, they're more of a mid-tempo team, but I do think that both teams are going to be able to hit enough shots for you to be able to get this total over, set this all at 138.5. So looking at the over end with Miami of Ohio, I think that they'll be able to close out this game late, set them as a 2.5-point favorite. So willing to lay the points to go along with this total over. 621, 622 on the betting board. Mississippi State is going to be playing us to South Carolina. South Carolina is between an 8 and 8.5-point underdog. And your total on this game, you're going to be getting it at a 138.5. South Carolina totals just feel like they've been set a little bit too low. This is a team that they rank in the top 50 in the country with regards to possessions per game, so they have been looking to play a little bit more frenetically, and I'm going to be taking a look at an over in this game as well, set it at a 145.5. Got a Mississippi State team that they rank in the top 30 when it comes to points scored on a per-possession basis. Now, they're dealing with an injury once again to Tolu Smith. What else is new there? But you still have a guy in Garrison Brooks who's been able to give you right around 11.5 points per game, a guy that's able to haul in there just under 6.5 rebounds per game, and has been able to shoot it well from 3-point range, right around 33.5% from long range. He's been able to give this team at least 7 points in each of the last 5 games. And then you take a look at Iverson Molinar, 18 points per game, has been not shooting as well from 3-point range this year as last year. Last year, shot over 40% from distance. This year, more like 29%, but does headline a team that has been so efficient. 4.2 assists at 2 turnovers per game. Shaquille Moore, he has been shooting it well from 3 at 37%, 10.5 points per game. Then you take a look at South Carolina. This is a team that they just turned the ball over a little bit too much. 15.5 turnovers per game. Jermaine Cousinar just has not impressed me. He does give the team 10 points per game. Does give out 2.5 assists as well, but 3 turnovers and shoots 56% at the free throw line. That just cannot happen. Wayne's Levique has been able to give you 5.5 rebounds per game, and he's really been one of the top rebounders for this team, which is relatively sad for this team. Chico Carter, someone that I expected a little bit more from, comes in from Murray State, shoots 42% from 3, but only right around 5 points per game out of him. And Keyshawn Bryant, after last year, he was so explosive for this team with 14.5 points, 5.5 boards. He has been very pedestrian this year with 7.7 points, a little bit over 3 boards. Does give the team a block per contest and has been able to give the team at least 1 steal in each of the last 5 games, but certainly has not been as effective as he was last season. Eric Stevenson is someone that I just don't trust either. I will say for him, 97% free throw shooter, but that said, not necessarily great from the outside. I think that this is going to be another tough game for South Carolina. Made Mississippi State a 10.5-point favorite. I think that Mississippi State is going to take it to a South Carolina defense that, let's call it what it is, they just have not been good at being able to do a good job down low or at being able to guard the arc. So I'm going to take this total over, and I'm going to lay up to 10.5 here when it comes to Mississippi State. 623, 624 on the betting board. Tennessee is going to be playing us at Texas A&M. Texas A&M is finding themselves in 11 to 11.5-point underdog with your total on this game, 131.5. When it comes to Tennessee, I wound up setting them as a 10-point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to take the points in this spot. When it comes to Tennessee, it certainly has been an up-and-down team this season. You do have Kennedy Chandler and Santiago Viscovi out out there in the backcourt that would be able to headline this offense. They're giving you a combined 27.2 points, a little bit under 8 assists per game as a collective, a little bit over 4 steals per game as well. And Viscovi shoots 38.5% from 3-point range. You've been able to have John Fulkerson chip in there right around 5 boards, 8 points per game. He's a guy that's been dealing with injuries all season long, but you can tell that he makes a big difference on the defensive end, along with Josiah Jordan James, who I do like, a little bit of a Swiss Army knife guy, gives you 7 points, 5.5 boards, a block, 1.5 steals per game. He's been able to get the team 9-plus points in 4 of the last 5 games that he's played in, so give him a lot of credit for just being able to contribute in a wide variety of ways. But I do think that A&M is going to be able to hang in there because this is a team that they shoot it well from 3, right around 34.5% from distance. Now, you've got a Tennessee team that, with regards to steals per game, they do rank in the top 5 in all of college basketball. And this is a Texas A&M team that they are going to get a little bit loose with it. They don't necessarily have that one dominant ball handler in Marcus Williams that is able to do a great job of being able to protect it. He does give out right around 3.7 assists per game, but 3 turnovers per game. All in all, Texas A&M, 13.5 turnovers per game, and they do shoot 64.5% at the free throw line. That is a big woe for this team. Among their top 5 scores, only one of them shoots above 68.1% at the charity stripe, but you also get good team rebounding out of this team as well. Henry Coleman the third, along Tyrese Radford, combined for about 11.5 rebounds per game. Aaron Cash has also been able to give you right around 4 boards per game. Not necessarily much of a score, but does a good job down low for this team, and I'm going to be very curious to see what you wind up being able to get out of someone like a Quentin Jackson, who has been so good for the team with 13 points per game, just contributes in a wide variety of ways. And I do think that it's a Texas A&M team that is going to be able to hold in there in a game that I think is going to be relatively slow. Both of these teams are mid-tempo teams, but really do hang their head on defense. I think the Tennessee is going to be able to slow this game down to a crawl. I think that Tennessee gets the job done, but you just don't know what you're going to be able to get from them on the offensive side of the ball. So I did wind up setting this total at a 130. I'm diving under of Tennessee. Could only make them 10-point favorites. They're taking the point. 625, 626 on the betting board. Toledo hits the road face-off against Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan is going to be finding themselves as a 10 to 10.5 point underdog. In your tallest game is 147.5. I set this line at 9.5. When it comes to Eastern Michigan, this team has actually ranked in the top 10 with regards to possessions per game all season long. So they've been able to do a terrific job there. And then when it comes to the flip side for this Toledo team, I do believe that they are the best team out there in the MAC, as you've got Ryan Rollins, and he has been a rolling for this offense. How about 20 points per game? He's able to chip in there just under 6 boards, 3.5 assists, shooting 34% from 3 with 2 steals per game, 21 plus points in each of the last 4 games, has had a combined 8 turnovers in those 4 games, so he is a high usage guy that really doesn't give the ball away too much. Daichi Shulmei is someone that's saying 6'7", shoots 49% from 3, 48.5% on the road, 12 plus points in each of the last 5 games, overall averaging 15 points, 6 boards, 2 assists. And he pairs very well with another versatile big man in Cedric Milner Jr. So be able to give the team 14 points, 6 boards, shoots 37.5% from 3. But then you take a look at the flip side, Noah Farrakhan has been able to give you 17 points per game. He's a solid outside shooter at 43% 3-point shooting. Bryce McBride has been able to give you about 12.5 points per game. Monte Scott has been solid coming in from Portland State with 13 points per contest. So Eastern Michigan does turn the ball over right around 14 times per contest. And you do have a guy on the flip side in Ray J. Dennis, who's been able to do a terrific job for this Toledo team in the backcourt. 12.6 boards, 3.5 assists, steal per game. He's been able to shoot 37% from 3, and you've got a little bit more versatility when it comes to this Toledo team as well. Keyshawn Sanders, who wound up missing a little bit of time earlier this year, he is back in full, but I do think that Eastern Michigan can hold in this game because someone like Adarian Spotsville has good versatility, 6.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, a little bit over a steal per game, and Eastern Michigan seems to be buckling down a little bit more with being able to take care of the ball. Nate Scott is able to get the team 5.5 boards and does a good job of being able to guard versatile bigs. So I do think that Eastern Michigan going to be lying within single digits. I'm going to be willing to take the double digits here when it comes to Eastern Michigan. When it comes to Soto, I wound up setting it at a 154. Toledo highly efficient on offense. You've got a super fast Eastern Michigan team. So taking a look at the over and the point. 627, 628 on the betting board. Duquesne is going to be playing us at Richmond. The Itsy Bitsy Spiders are a 7.5 to 8.5 point favorite in your tallest game. Say we're between 138.5 and 140. This is a Richmond team that until they start to defend, I really can't take them as seriously when it comes to these spreads. I feel like they've been quite overvalued. I'm going to be taking a look at the points when it comes to this Duquesne team. Richmond is outside the top 200 when it comes to points allowed on a per possession basis, and this is a Spiders team that they can be had from the outside. They are 289th in the country with regards to opponents' 3-point shooting percentage. That is a big giant wall, and for Duquesne, this is a bunch that they do have a guy that I really like with his versatility, and Kevin Easley comes in from TCU, 12 points, 6.5 rebounds, shooting 42% from 3-point range, has been able to give the team at least 6 rebounds in 4 out of the last 5 games. Now you take a look at the flip side. Tyler Burton along with Grant Golden have been terrific for Richmond. They combined to be able to give you 31 points, 13.5 rebounds. They have both been able to give you about a half a block per game, with Golden shooting 35% from 3 with 3 assists per game. Burton has been able to shoot 39% from the outside. And then you do have the all-time leader in the NCAA in steals per game in Jacob Gilliard. Terrific at the point guard spot. 12.5 points, 6 assists, 3.3 steals per game. So he has been absolutely amazing. But guys like Nate Kao, Nick Sherrod combining for about 15 points per game, that's a little bit of an issue. Andre Gustafson has been injured for half the campaign. And then with Duquesne, we've got a guy in Tyson Acuff who's able to shoot 46% from three. Doesn't give you a lot of scoring, but a good off-the-bench sort of microwave score. And then you've got Amir Spears along with Leon Ayers III. These two guys give you about 12 points per contest. Spears is able to shoot 35% from three. These two guys combined to be able to give you 3 steals per game. All in all, it's a Duquesne team that they shoot about 33.5% from three-point range. Duquesne, they themselves have a few defensive woes, but I think that their defense is certainly better than that of what you're going to be able to get out of Richmond. They seem to have been able to come into their own a little bit more as well. I do think that Richmond should be able to win this game, but I only think that Richmond wins this game by 3, so I'm certainly willing to take the points when it comes to Duquesne. Richmond has been a relatively slow yet efficient team, and Duquesne, they're looking to crank things down as well. So this is a spot in which I'm going to be taking a look at the under, semi-total at a 135. So diving under and taking the point. 629, 630 on the betting board. Canisius is going to be hitting the road face-off against Siena. The Saints of Siena are finding themselves as a favorite of 4.5 to 4 points, and your total in this game is 135.5. With Siena, I'm willing to lay up to 5 with them. When it comes to Siena, certainly has been a little bit of an up-and-down season for them. They were expecting some good things out of UNC transfer Andrew Playtech. He is now, unfortunately, out of the fold, but Jackson Sormo, gentleman that comes over from the Big West, he has been able to do a nice job of being able to give the team 10 points, 6.5 rebounds per game down low. And then when it comes to Canisius, this has been a bunch that had been relatively solid whenever they had Malik Green out there and firing all cylinders. But if you take a look at Malik Green, he has scored, I believe, 6 points or fewer in each of the last 4 games that he's played in. He's trying to play for this team, but he is just clearly hobbled. That is a big, giant issue for them. And then when it comes to the backcourt, you have been able to get Amadou Fofana, who's been able to give you 3.5 assists to right around 1.8 turnovers per game, 9.5 points per game. He shoots 35% from 3, has been a little bit of an up-and-down score in the last 5 games. He is at 0, 15, 15, 18, and 5 points, so you don't necessarily know what to expect there. Meanwhile, with Siena, you don't necessarily have that terrific ball handler for the team, Anthony Gaines, leading the way with just over 2 assists per game, but he comes in from Northwestern and has been able to give the team 9 points, 6.5 boards. This is a Siena team that they rank in the top 150 with regards to being able to guard the 3-point arc, and Canisius, they're a team that they themselves don't necessarily pump it in from three-point range at right around 31% per distance. They shoot 71% the free throw line, and Yako Fritz has some good versatility, 8 points, 5.5 boards per game, and then you're going to be able to get right around 10 points, 2 assists out of Jordan Henderson. But I think that Siena is going to be able to win out in this game because I do like what Kobe Rogers is able to do as a peer scorer, 14.5 points per game, making 46% of his three. Siena's hole, they shoot 35% from the outside, turn the ball over right around 14 times per game. But with this Canisius bunch, they generate just 6 steals per game, despite the fact that they're a little bit more of an up-tempo team. Siena, they're looking to play a little bit more slowly. They wind up setting this total at 137, so somewhat in the middle. I think that you wind up getting some late game fouling that winds up pushing this total over, but with Siena willing to lay up to 5 with them, so taking the over along with laying the points. 631, 632 on the betting board. UNC is going to be hitting the road face off against Louisville. Louisville is a 2.5 to 3.0 underdog, and your total on this game, you're going to be finding it at a 145.5. Set my total at a 145.5. I would rather have the over than the under, just because with UNC, we have seen some big giant unders with them, and at the same time, we've seen them get completely just shut out of games as well. You're going to get either one or the other. It's not really a case in which it's probably going to land right on the number, but I do think that Armando Bacot is going to be able to dominate things down low, so I did wind up saying North Carolina as a 5-point favorite. You've got him being able to give the team 16 points, 12 boards, 1.7 blocks per game, and then you've got Caleb Love along with RJ Davis. These two guys have been able to combine for 6.7 assists, a little bit over 7 boards, and 28 points per game, with each shooting at least 40% from 3-point range. Dawson Garcia has been dealing with a little bit of an ailment, and in that time, Bacot has been able to give the team at least 12 rebounds in each of the last 5 games, and combined 9 blocks in the last 2 as well, and you still have out there Brady Manick, a guy that's able to give you 13 points, 5.5 boards, 39% from 3-point range. He's going to make it a Manick Tuesday for a Louisville team that they're looking to pick up the pieces from losing Chris Mack. You do have Malik Williams giving the team 10 points, 8.5 rebounds per game, but it's going to be really interesting to see what you wind up getting out of this team moving forward. Dre Davis has been all over the place with this team, shooting just 26% from 3-point range. Louisville as a whole, they shoot 32% from 3, 68% at the free throw line, and a lot of this wound up coming about early on in the season. Mason Faulkner is a very ball-dominant guy that that did not wind up getting into the program until late July, as maybe give the team 3 assists per game, but you can tell that he never really found his footing. With regards to a scoring standpoint, L. Ellis has been able to give you right around 7.5 points per game, but how about this last 5 games for him? 10, 7, 5, 1, and 18 points. So you just don't know what you're going to be able to get out of darn near any of these guards from Louisville on a night-in and night-out basis. Samuel Williamson has not lived up to his billing either. I do think that North Carolina should be able to dominate this game. We'll only lay up to 5 here with North Carolina. And at 145.5 or lower, I'm going to be taking a look at the over. 633, 634 on the betting board. Georgetown is going to be playing us to Seton Hall. Seton Hall find themselves as a 7-point favorite. And your total on this game going to be getting it between 152 and 152.5. When it comes to Georgetown, I wind up setting them as an 8.5-point underdog. I do like what I'm seeing out of the Seton Hall team. Seton Hall is a team that they bumped up their tempo a little bit as well. This is now a team that ranks in the top 125 with regards to possessions per game. You've got Kadari Richmond, who's just been Mr. Do-It-All for this team. He doesn't necessarily give you a whole bunch of scoring, as he's been pumping in there right around 8.5 points per game, but 3.6 boards, 3.7 assists, nearly 2 steals per game. You've got a Seton Hall team that they only shoot about 32% per three, but 77% the free throw line, 12.3 turnovers per game, and you've got a guy down low in Ike Obiagu, who he literally gives you more blocks than points. 2.6 points to 3.5 blocks per game. Alexis Yedna has been able to emerge for this team as well. He's had a couple 10-plus rebound games, as he's a 6'8 versatile player who's been able to give this team right around 9.5 points, 7.5 boards per game. Bryce Aiken shoots right around 35% per three with 14.5 points per contest. Then you take a look at Georgetown, and this team ranks in the bottom 125 with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, but they themselves shoot it at nearly a 38% clip. You've got Donald Carey along with Caden Rice, who combined to be able to give you 25.5 points out there in the backcourt, with Carey 3.5 assists and 1.5 steals per game. Both guys shoot at least 40% from three-point range at least 88.9% the free throw line. Aminu Muhammad is able to give the team 8 boards, 14 points per game, but he's really the only guy down low other than Timmy Obahovi, who's been able to give you more than, I would say, about 5 rebounds per game. And then you take a look at what you've been able to get out of Mr. Colin Holloway, and they will give the team 10 points per game, but a massive liability on defense. You don't know what you're going to be able to get out of him night in and night out, but does shoot right around 46% from three-point range overall and 60% from three-point range at home. This is a Georgetown team that the fear with them is not being able to put up points. It's the fact that they're probably going to give up a whole bunch. I do think that Seton Hall is going to be able to take it to them, but I do think that Seton Hall is going to be able to do a solid job. Bryce Aiken is someone that is very questionable for this game. I'm going to be handicapping it as if he's going to play, but it's going to be so limited. So even if he's ruled out, it really doesn't make much of a difference when it comes to this game, in my opinion. Set Seton Hall as an 8.5 point favorite. I did want to make my total 152.5. I'm willing to take the 152/152.5 over, really my max here, but willing to take it over, and I'm willing to lay up to 8.5 here. When it comes to Seton Hall, 635, 636 on the betting board. Alabama is going to be in the road face-off against Auburn. Auburn is a 7.5 point favorite with your total on this game, 155.5. I think that Auburn should be a relatively decent sized favorite here. I think the bookmakers have went a little bit too far. I wound up saying my line at 6.5. When it comes to Alabama, this team just does have a lot of hidden potential, and they're actually a team that has been doing a little bit of better work with regards to offensive efficiency on the road than they have at home. That doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, but you do have a pair of guys in Javon Quinterly along Jaden Shackelford that combined to be able to give you 32 points per game. I like what I've been able to see out of them. When it comes to the flip side for Auburn, this team averages over 8 blocks per game. That is number one in all of college basketball. Walker Kessler is able to give you 7 boards, 4 blocks per game among power conference players. That is number one in all of college basketball, so you got to figure that he's going to be firing all cylinders once again. But then you do take a look at the flip side for this Alabama team. Now I have someone like a James Ross who's back in the fold. He's able to give you a couple rebounds. He's able to give you some quality minutes. You've also been able to get a little bit more out of someone like Noah Gurley, who's been able to give you 7 points in the neighborhood, about 4 rebounds per game. And then you've also got Keon Ellis, who has just been Mr. Versatile for this team. He's been able to lead the team in steals per game, gives you a little bit over 12.6 rebounds per game. J.D. Davison has been solid. And then you take a look at this Auburn bunch, and they do a good job of being able to share the ball. Wendell Green has given you in the pocket of about 5 assists per game. You haven't been able to get as much out of Allen Flanagan, but just the fact that he's now back to the fold after he wound up missing the first 15 or so games of the season, that should be able to give this team a little bit of oomph. And then with Auburn as well, I do think that you've got one of the top players in all of college basketball in Jabari Smith. 15.5 points, 7 boards, 6'10" gentleman that is shooting 40% from 3-point range overall. That's up to 40 42% whenever he is at home. I think that Auburn gets the job done, but I do think that Alabama is starting to find themselves. They just seem to be a team that they play up or down to the competition when these two teams wound up playing in Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago. Very much a nip and tuck game. Auburn pulled it out by a count of 81-77, and I think we're going to see something similar here. I did wind up saying Auburn is a 6.5-point favorite, so I am going to be willing to take 7.5 here when it comes to Alabama. With my total, I wound up setting it at a 155.5. Seeing what we've got right now with 155.5, I would rather have an over than an under, but if this winds up getting bet up to a 156, 156.5, I'd be willing to side with the under. So in a little bit of wait and see mode with the total, but certainly willing to take 7.5 here with Alabama. 637, 638 on the betting board. You've got yourself Michigan, and Michigan is going to be playing us to Nebraska. Nebraska is a 14.5-point favorite with your total, and we're between 144.5 and 145 when it comes to Michigan. Won't lay up to 15 with them. Hunter Dickinson has been impressive for this team. 17 points, 8 boards, shooting in the mid-30s from three-point range. Now, the good news for Nebraska is that they are going to have Alonzo Verge back in the fold. Verge has been someone that has been able to give this team quite a bit of scoring with right around 14.5 points per game. He has been turning the ball over right around 3.5 times per game overall on the road. That actually expands to 4 turnovers per game, but he is a guy that is still able to give you right around 4 boards per game as well. And then you take a look at what you're going to be able to get out of this Michigan backcourt, and you do still have Eli Brooks, who has been a little bit of a liability this year, but has been able to give this team 11.5 points, 3 assists, shooting 37.5% from 3, 88% at the free throw line. Michigan, their 69% free throw shooting is a little bit tough, but I signed these two teams matched up. You did have Nebraska giving up a 100 spot over there to Michigan, so that was a big giant woe. You take a look at Bryce McGowan's, he's been able to give this team 16.5 points, 5.5 boards per game, but he shoots right around 28.5% from 3. All in all, Nebraska, they shoot only about 30% from 3. Kobe Webster is right now one of your key contributors off the bench. He's only giving you 6 points per game. Now, Trey McGowan's is back at the fold for this team. He did wind up having a nice 11.7 board and 2 block game against Rutgers, but he is still coming off of a pretty major injury, so got to be watching out for that. And you don't have a lot down low for Nebraska. Right now, Derek Walker, his 5.9 rebounds per game, is leading the charge. And for Michigan, Caleb Houston, when he's been at home, has been able to shoot 45% from 3, overall shooting about 37% from distance, has been able to give the team 10.5 points per game, double figures each out of the last 4. I think that that is huge for Michigan, and him being able to produce, I think is going to allow Michigan to be able to improve as the season goes along with Michigan. One delay up to 15 with them. Michigan, I don't think that they're going to be able to score 100 points like they did the last time against Nebraska, but I think that they can get north of 80 in Nebraska the last game. They scored 67. I think that they could do that once again. Set this total at 148. I'm willing to go over, and we'll lay up to 15 here with Michigan. 639, 640 on the betting board. St. John's is going to be playing us at Providence. The Friars are finding themselves as a 2.5-point underdog. And your total game is anywhere between 144.5 and 145. I'd say these two teams wound up playing. St. John's wound up taking the L by kind of 83-73 in a game in which they shot 5-22 from three-point range. Providence was 3-16. I certainly think that both of these teams are going to be a little bit more warm from three. Now, I do think that the tempo is going to be a little bit slower as well, but with that said, I'm willing to go over in this game. Wound up setting this total more around a 147. And for St. John's, I do think that they're going to be able to get their revenge, set them as a 4.5-point favorite. It's not like they've got tremendous depth, but someone like a Tariq Coburn, who winds up coming in from Hofstra, he's able to do a solid job shooting about 42% from 3, 5.5 points per game when it comes to where you're able to get elsewhere as well. You have been able to have Joel Soriano be able to give this team right around 5.5 rebounds per game, and Aaron Wheeler, double figures in 4 out of the last 5 games for this team, has been able to pump in their 5-plus rebounds in 4 out of the last 5 games as well, has come in from Purdue. He's been terrific, and then you've got Julian Chiapenny and Pasha Alexander, pair of guys that have been able to combine for 4.3 steals per game. Chiapenny, 36% 3-point shooter with 19 points and 7 boards per game. Pasha Alexander, 14.5 points per game, doles out 5 assists per game. Mathis has been able to give you right around 9.5 points per game as well. Then you take a look at Providence, and Noah Horkler has been able to do a great job as a versatile big man. He's able to give you 8.5 boards, 10 points per game, shooting 42% from 3. A.J. Reeves is now back at the fold as well. He had a pair of threes in that win against Marquette Al Durham. He's been able to give you 13.5 points per game. And then Jared Bynum, 4.3 assists per game, 9-plus points in 8 out of the last 9 games after he had a little bit of a rough start to the year. Wamanaya, along with Nate Watson, both give you a combined 12 rebounds per game. Watson, 13.5 points and a block per game to go along with that as well. But when it comes to this game, you got a team in St. John's that they rank in the top 30 with regards to possessions per game. Providence is in the bottom 75. I do think, though, that St. John's, much like they did did in game one, is going to be able to get this game up tempo. I think that they're going to do a better job of being able to sink their threes. And I do think that St. John's going to be able to get revenge out there in the state of New York, set them as a 4.5-point favorite. We'll lay the Red Storm here. And with the total, made it a 147, so going over as well. 641, 642 on the betting board. Texas Tech going to be playing us at Texas. Texas is back to being an underdog, as they are an underdog of anywhere between 5.5 and 6.5 points. And your total on this game going to be getting it between a 120 and a 121.5. It's a spot in which I wound up setting the total at a 126.5. I'm willing to go over. You've got two relatively slow teams, but I think we went a little bit too far here, both of these teams. They do generate right around 8 to 9 steals per game, so they could turn some defense into offense with that aspect as well. And then you take a look at Texas, and it certainly has been an interesting offense for this team. Marcus Carr has now been able to give you at least 9 points in 8 out of the last 10 games, so after a really bad start to the year, still not a great fit, but at the same time, he's been a little bit better. And then you take a look at Timmy Allen, and he has been tremendous for this team on the road. 14 points and 7.5 boards in his true road games. At home, he's averaging more like 10 points per game, so give him credit on the road. He has actually been a very good performer for this team. 8-plus rebounds in 2 out of the last 3 games as well. And then you take a look at Texas Tech. Bryson Williams is a guy that certainly does impress me. He's been able to give you 13.5 points, 4.5 boards, shoots 46% from 3. Terrence Shannon may or may not play in this game. Even if he does play, I think that he's going to be a relatively big non-factor. And Kevin McCullough hasn't necessarily been a factor with regards to scoring recently. Single digits in each of the last 5 games he's played in, but has been a good facilitator for this team. 3-plus assists in each of the last 5 games, 5-plus rebounds in 4 out of the last 5. So even though he's not scoring as much as he was towards the beginning part of the year, he has been a good player for this team. And then when it comes to Texas Tech, if this game is close, they only shoot about 68.5% at the free throw line. Texas, more like 77% at the charity stripe. Both of these teams shoot between 32.2 and 33.5% from 3-point range. Marco Santos Silva has been solid down the line. Really, both of these teams are teams in which they have great depth. They don't necessarily have that one marquee scorer, but both do a solid job of being able to lock in. You've got a big-time rivalry here. Mark Adams, it wound up coaching under Chris Beard for many years. Now he's the head man at Texas Tech, and as we know, Chris Beard was so big for that Texas Tech program as well. I do think that Texas winds up taking the loss, but I think that it's going to be relatively close. Set this line at 3.5. I'm willing to take the Longhorns, and with this total, made it a 126.5, so going over 643, 644 on the bank. Board Utah State going to be playing us Air Force. Air Force is finding themselves as a 14.5 point underdog in your tallest game between 125 and 125.5. With Air Force, I don't think that they're going to be able to do what they wound up doing the first time to Utah State, and that was get an outright win, with Utah State shooting 1 of 19 from 3-point range in that contest. But I do think that things are going to be relatively competitive in this game. I did wind up setting this line more at a 14, so now getting the hook, I'm going to be willing to take the points. You've got a guy in AJ Walker who certainly is the heart and soul of this Air Force team. He has been able to give the team 16 points per contest, shooting 40% from 3-point range. But you've also had Jake Headbrother be able to do a good job of being able to contribute 9.5 points. He shoots 37% from 3. Evan Taylor, 9.5 points, right around 5.5 boards, 4 assists, 1.5 steals per game. So there's been a little bit more hope for Walker than in past years. And then with Utah State, Justin Bean, in terms of players and what they mean to their respective teams, one of the most meaningful to Utah State. I mean, how about what he's been able to do with 18 points, 10 boards? He's able to dole out 2.5 assists, 1.8 steals per game, all while shooting 48% from 3 as a 6'8" combo player. Brandon Horvath is able to shoot 36.5% from distance. He gives you 12 points per game. Now, Brock and Roll Miller is going to be out of the fold for this team, but you've been able to get a lot of production out of guys like RJ Rocketell, Steve Ashworth. Ashworth has been able to give the team double figures in each out of the last 3 games, 9-plus in those, and he's been able to give you a combined 16 assists, 6 turnovers in that time span as well. You've also been able to get a little bit more out of Rylan Jones. Jones is someone that's been a little bit banged up, but he's been giving out 5-plus assists per game. He, too, though, might wind up being out of this game. He's missed the last few contests for this team, so as a result, this has been a team that they've been running a lot more out of Sean Barisow, and Barisow has been able to do a good job for this team. He's been able to generate at least a steal in each out of the last 3 games in which you've had no Rylan Jones. He has had at least 8 points in all 3 of those games. Hasn't turned the ball over a lot, so give him a lot of credit there. I think that Utah State, even without Jones in the fold, will still be fine. But with that said, this is a line that I wound up setting at 14. I think that Utah State gets revenge for losing the first time around. But with that said, I do think that Air Force, a team that they do turn the ball over 14.5 times per game, they're going to be able to protect it a little bit more in this game. And I do think that Air Force, a 36% 3-point shooting team, going to be able to bury a couple as well. I'm going to be willing to take this total over. Wound up setting it more around a 127. 7. I made Utah State a 14-point favorite, so we'll take 14 and a hook here with Air Force. 645, 646 is the DK Nation play of the day. LSU is going to be playing us at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is finding themselves in between a 14 to 14 and a half point underdog. Draws game is anywhere between 124 and a half and 125 and a half. When it comes to Ole Miss, I did wind up saying them as a 12 and a half point underdog, but what I'm really going to be looking at is the over. I just feel like it's an LSU team that is doing for a little bit of regression on the defensive end. They have been number one in the country with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. And I think that they're going to be ending the year in the top five. Good news for them is that Xavier Pinson is back in the fold without him in the lineup the last, I'll call it, six games, because he did return against CCU, but he only played 7 minutes. They have scored 70 points or fewer in every one of them. Meanwhile, with him on the floor, this has just been a little bit more of an explosive team. He's been able to give the team 4.3 assists and 2 steals per game, so that's going to be big. May not play his full allotment of minutes, but him being back helps out this offense. You've obviously got Darius Saves giving you 13 points, 7.5 boards. He shoots 33% from three. But when it comes to LSU, this is a team that they have been turning the ball over right around 16 times for contests ever since SEC play wanted to be getting at for Ole Miss. They've been without their top scorer in Jarkel Joyner the last, we'll call it, 3 or so weeks. But Jamin Brakefield, along with Matthew Morrell, have been able to combine for 19 points. They combined to be able to shoot about 38.5% from three-point range. You've been able to get some good facilitation out of Austin Crowley, 6'5", a little bit of a do-it-all guy who's been able to give you 2.5 assists per game, not necessarily much of a scorer, but is able to haul in there a couple of boards as well. So I do like what he's been able to do for this team. Deshaun Ruffin, 12 points per game, 3.5 assists, 2.3 steals per game. I think that both of these teams are going to be able to generate some turnovers, turn that defense into offense, with Ruffin 9-plus points in each of the last 5 games. And it's an Ole Miss team that they do shoot right around 72% of the free throw line. They turn the ball over 12.5 times per game. You've got an LSU team that, just because of the tempo, I think that their totals are getting set a little bit too low. They rank in the top 75 with regards to possessions per game. Ole Miss is a little bit more of a controlled team. You do have Nysir Brooks being able to give you 8 rebounds per game, and then Terry Easton has been able to give this LSU team 16.7 boards per game. Efton Reed is a 7-footer that's able to shoot threes. He's been able to pump in there right around 9 to 10 points per game, but when it comes to this total, I think it's just went a little bit too low. I think that LSU still sold on defense, but when you wind up getting 70-plus possessions in a game, it's really hard to have a 124/125.5, say, under. Set this total at 132.5, so I'm going to be willing to take a look at the over. And with Ole Miss, I wound up setting them as a 12.5-point dog, so taking a look at the points to go along with the DK Nation play of the over, 647, 648 on the betting board. Tulsa is going to be hitting the road to face off against Wichita State. Wichita State finds themselves a 7.5-point favorite total on this game, saying between 136 and 136. Half. Got a Wichita State team that is more around the middle-ish tempo of all of college basketball. And Ty Etienne has been a little bit of a liability for this team this season, but you can sense him starting to pick it up a little bit more. 14-plus points in 3 of the last 4 games. Last year shot 39% from 3. This year, more like 32.5% from distance, but he has been able to give the team still right around 14.5 points per game. What I do like for this team is the fact that you've still got Maurice Odusi being able to give you 6 rebounds per game, and the guy that really goes under the radar and has been able to do a nice job of being able to help the offense get a little bit more online. Craig Porter Jr., 6 points, 4 boards, 3.3 assists per game, shooting 37.5% from 3, 8 plus points in each of the last 4 games, 4 plus assists in each of the last 4 as well. So he has been able to do an absolutely tremendous job there. And then you take a look at Tulsa, and it's been all about Dry Horn along Sam Griffin. Both of these guys have been able to combine for about 33 points per game. You've got these two guys combining to shoot about 84% at the free throw line, 39.5% from 3. But aside from Dry Horn, nobody else gives you more than 4.2 rebounds per game. You've been able to get a little bit of production of Tim Dahlgren. Whenever he's been out there, he's been able to give you right in the pocket about 5.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game. And I will say Darian Jackson, he's been able to give the team 9 points per game, shoots in the mid-30s from 3-point range, but now 8 points or fewer in 3 out of the last 5 games. That is a big giant issue with Wichita State. It's a mid-tempo team that has really been hanging their head on defense. Offense just has not been able to get there. Quad Grant and company have not necessarily been terrific. Dexter Dennis has been able to step up 8.5 points, 5 boards, a guy that has out given the team 8 plus points in 4 of the last 5 games. So he's been able to do a little bit more recently, but I think that things are going to be relatively buttoned up. You've got a Tulsa team that they have been fading away on defense, but at the same time, this is a team that they do play relatively slow, relatively controlled as well. So it's a spot in which I am going to be taking a look at the under, set this total at a 131.5. And when it comes to Wichita State, I am willing to lay up to 8.5 with them. So I'm going to be laying the points, and I'm going to be taking a look at the over as well. We move on to 649, 650 on the betting board. UC Davis, it's a road face off against UC Riverside. Riverside is a 6-point favorite with your total on this game and between 128.5 at 129. Got a UC Davis team that is a mid-tempo team with regards to college basketball. Riverside, they're in the bottom 30, but with UC Riverside, got to love what you'll be able to get out of Zion Poyan, right around 15.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, shoots in the mid-30s from three-point range, and that's a little bit of a rarity for this team because UC Riverside, they shoot about 29.7% from three-point range, one of the lesser marks that you're going to be able to find in all of college basketball. With this Riverside team, you do have Colin McRae, who's able to give you 8 rebounds for him. He's a 7-footer that is very stout down low, but with UC Davis, you've got to love what you'll be able to get out of Elijah Pepper as well. Pepper has been peppering in there right around 15 points, a little bit over 5 rebounds per game, so has been able to do a nice job on the offensive end. You've got Ezra Manjohn as well, who's been able to give you a little bit over 3 assists, 15 points per game. He only shoots, though, 24% from 3-point range. It's a UC Davis team that has really played up or down to the competition. They've already got road wins against Utah State along with Oregon State this season, and they also lost to the Urban Knights of Academy of the Arts, a D2 program, on their own 4x20 points. So that shows you how unpredictable they are. Now, to the credit of UC Davis, among your top 4 scorers, 3 of them give you at least 4.9 rebounds per game. Christian Anigwe along Caleb Fuller, these two guys have been able to combine for just under 22 points per game. Anigwe is able to give you 6.5 points per game. Fuller more around 5, and Fuller does shoot right around 35.5% for 3. With UC Davis, the 66% free throw shooting is a little bit of a red flag, but with Riverside, they only shoot right around 70% the free throw line. That is a little bit of an issue. They've been without J.P. Morbin recently as well. You do have Dominic Pickett along with Flynn Cameron being able to combine for about 21.5 points per game. Cameron has been able to shoot 35.5% from three-point range and combined to be able to give you 9 rebounds per game as well. But depth has been eluding this UC Riverside team a little bit as well. I do think that UC Davis is going to be able to do a relatively solid job of being able to hang in there in this game. I think that Riverside's overall size is going to hurt them a little bit. So I did wind up setting this line at 5. I am willing to take the 6 here with UC Davis. And when it comes to total, did wind up setting it at a 129. I do think that you wind up getting some late game fouling here at a 128.5. I'm willing to go over, and I'm willing to take the points with UC Davis. 651, 652 on the betting board. Samford is going to be playing us at Cal. Cal is finding themselves a 5.5 point underdog with your total in this game. And we're doing 130 and 130.5 when it comes to Samford. Set them as a 6-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it here. Samford has been a little bit of a banged up team. Rasmin Reynaud, the 7-foot-1 gentleman, is back in the fold for this team. And then you take a look at what you've been able to get out of Harrison Ingram, a guy that I think is going to be a first-round pick in the NBA draft. And I've liked what I've seen out of him. 11.5 points, 7 boards, a guy that has been able to shoot about 35.5% from 3-point range, a guy that has been able to get the team at least 5 boards in 4 out of the last 5 games. And then you take a look at what you've been able to get out of Michael O'Connell, and he's been underrated, a good guard for this team. Right around 4 assists, only about 7 points per contest, but has done a good job cutting down on the turnovers as well. He combined 8 in the last 5 games, has been able to generate 5 steals in the last 4 games. And then when it comes to Cal, very much a slow and controlled team. Grant Antisevich, 10.5 points, 7 boards. He shoots 94% the free throw line as a 6'9 combo player. And then you've got Andre 3000 Kelly, give you 13.5 points, 8.5 boards. Gotta love his game. Cal overall shoots 72% the free throw line, 34% for 3, but they just don't generate any turnovers, and that's been the big bugaboo for the Samford team. Samford as a whole, they commit right around 16 turnovers a game. They shoot about 34.5% from 3. You've got Jaden Dallaire along Spencer Jones combined to be able to give you 20 points, 8.7 boards. These two guys combined to be able to shoot about 34-35% from 3-point range. And for Samford, they do shoot just 66.5% at the free throw line, but they've got enough size that I think that they should be able to own the paint. James Keefe has been able to give you right around 4 boards per game overall, but 5-plus boards in each of the last 3 games. He's seen more minutes, has been able to do a good job down low, and I think that Samford should be able to stop this Cal team down low. And with Cal, not really a lot of facilitation. Joel Brown has been able to give you 3 assists per game, but certainly has been a guy that has been in a little bit of foul trouble and has his offensive woes as well. I do think that Cal, a team that ranks in the bottom 75 with regards to possessions per game, is going to be able to get their slow and controlled tempo. Set this total at a 127, so I'm willing to dive under. I'm willing to lay up to 6 here with Cal, still going to be laying the points. 653, 654 on the betting board. You've got yourself Nevada, and they're going to be hitting the road to face off against UNLV. UNLV is finding themselves as a 2.5 point favorite, and your total on this game, you're going to be getting it anywhere between a 146 and a 147. And when it comes to UNLV, what I'm saying them is a 2.5 point underdog. I don't understand necessarily why they are the favorite in this game. I recognize that Nevada has been very much an underachieving team this season, but you've got a absolutely tremendous backcourt that I think is going to be able to win out in this game. Grant Shurfield along Desmond Cambridge, who have both been able to combine for about 34 points per game. You've got Cambridge being able to give you right around 1.7 steals per game. Shurfield, 6 assists, and has been able to shoot 36.5% from 3-point range. As a whole, Nevada shoots 75.5% free throw line, only about 32% from 3, but Will Baker is a 7-footer that's able to give you 11.5 points, 5.5 boards. He shoots 45% from 3-point range. Warren Washington has been dealing with some injuries for this Nevada team, but looks like he's probably going to go, but is probably not going to play his full allotment of minutes in this game, a guy that's able to give you 10 points, 6 boards per game, but it looks like he's going to try to give you some sort of a go in this game. And then when it comes to the flip side for this UNLV team, you've had Bryce Hamilton just be absolutely on fire for this team, that game that they wound up having against Colorado State. I mean, the dude wound up having 45 points. He's had 23 plus in each of the last 4 games, but the number 2 scorer for UNLV hasn't necessarily been able to do a whole heck of a lot recently because he's probably going to wind up missing this game. Donovan Williams is a game time decision. Guy that's able to shoot 43.5% from 3-point range, played just 14 minutes in that game against San Diego State. And even if he does wind up going in this game, he's probably not going to be 100% before missing the back half of that game against San Diego State. Had 15 plus in each of the previous 4 games. Royce Ham is able to go ham down low for UNLV with 9.5 boards, 8.5 points per game. But Michael Nuga, you just don't know what you're going to be able to get out of him. This is a guy that has given you now 8 points or fewer in each of the last 4 games. He'll erupt for like 120-point night every month, and then he'll fade into the abyss from there. Jordan McCabe, good fast burst guy, right around 4.5 assists and 1.6 turnovers per game. UNLV has collective. They shoot 33% from 3 and relatively sound defensively, but on offense, they leave a lot to be desired. Nevada, they rank in the top 35 with regards to possessions per game. I think that this is going to be more of a mid-tempo game. Set this out at 144.5, but I do think that the backcourt of Nevada wins out in this game, so I'm going to be taking Nevada on the money line to go along with that total under. And we wrap things up with 655, 656 on the betting board for SSA. It's the road to face off against San Jose State. San Jose State, 11-11.5-point underdogs. So this game is anywhere between 125 and 126. And when it comes to this spot, I did wind up saying Fresno State as a 9.5-point favorite. It was simple. Anything of single digits, I was willing to lay it with Fresno State. Anything of double digits, was willing to take it here with San Jose State. And San Jose State is a team that they, as a collective, are one of the better three-point shooting teams that you're going to find out there in not just the Mountain West, but really in college basketball in general. Omari Moore is someone that gets a little bit loose with the ball with 3.5 turnovers per game, but he's shooting darn near 40% from three-point range. He's been able to do a terrific job of being able to give the team between 14 and 15 points per game. Now, Ibrahim Diallo being out of the fold has been hurting San Jose State. He was the team's main rebounder with right around 8 boards per game. Now it's Moore who's giving you more around 5.5 boards per game. And then you take a look at the flip side and what you're going to be able to get out of this Fresno State team. It is all about 7-footer Orlando Robinson. 19.5 points, 8.5 boards, guy that shoots 36.5% from 3-point range for a Fresno State team that is legitimately in the bottom 10 with regards to possessions per game. So his usage rate is very high. You've got Anthony Holland, who's able to give you 9.5 points, 6 boards, shooting 45% from 3-point range. You've got guys like Jordan Campbell, who they would come through with right around 7.5 points per game. But then you do take a look at what you're able to get out of San Jose State and some of the ancillary pieces. And a few of these guys have been able to step up. Trebek Groner has been able to give you 8 points. He shoots 36% from 3-point range. Got another 47% 3-point shooter, Trey Anderson. He shoots 47% from distance, more around 48.5% from distance. Anderson right around 10 points, 5 boards per game. And then I do like what you're able to get as well out of the Ole Miss transfer, Sean Robinson. He's been able to chip in there 5 boards, 6'9" combo player that doesn't necessarily shoot it well from 3, but he's able to pop some 3s, has been able to give the team a combined 17 rebounds in the last 2 contests. I do think that San Jose State is going to be able to hold up on their home floor. And when you get a team as slow as Fresno State trying to cover double digits like this, it is very much a difficult task. I wound up saying my total at 125.5. I think that Fresno State is going to take the air out of the ball. If it wasn't for a miraculous overtime, their last game would have wound up going under the total. So it's a spot in which I am going to be taking a look at this total under with San Jose State. Just too many turnovers for them. But with that said, I do think that San Jose State, despite the fact that they're turning the ball over right around 13.5 times per game, going to be able to hold up against a Fresno State backcourt that lacks a little bit of luster. So I am willing to take double digits here with San Jose State to go along with the under. That will wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSIN family of podcasts. Big thanks to Brian Rolfe of HXCBB for joining me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you hear podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, one of 2 ways we offer this in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at JarenSquarty1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review, coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.